Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
This is Seth Gilliam.
Hey, this is Holland Roden.
My name is Kiahu Kuhuanui.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Ponzio.
I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hey, it's Ronnie Adams.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh!
Ha-ha! This is Jeff Davis, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Welcome to episode 90 of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. 90 is a lot. I'm saying that every time now. We're really creeping up on it, aren't we, Karen?
Yes, we're going to be hitting episode 100 of Rewatchable next week. And to think that we're only 10 episodes away from that on this podcast, too, is kind of mind blowing.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a lot. Anyway, Karen and I are here today to speak to you with a guest from Teen Wolf. We have our good friend and supporter of the podcast, Will Wallace, if you'll allow me to call you as such. Hello.
Hello. How are you all today?
Good. We're good. So just very quickly in terms of reaching out to the podcast, as usual, you can find us on Twitter, NATW Podcast, and you can email us, natwpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Tumblr, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, or if you want to follow us on Instagram for our occasional goings on there, it's also NATW Podcast on Instagram. Just jumping right into our guest today, Will. Now, we were introduced to Will a little while back, but he is part of the writing team for Teen Wolf, which we are going to talk a little bit more about how flexible that role is. So, Will, what is your current official title with the show?
My official title is I'm the writer's assistant, so I basically help the writers with everything they need to keep their job as easy as possible. So yeah, anything they need, I do for them, and that's my official title.
Cool. We're going to talk about what that entails in a second, because I have some really wacky ideas about what that entails, and I want to try and narrow down some of that.
Okay, that's great.
But how long have you been with the show?
I've been the writer's assistant since, I think, about episode 310 of season 3,
yeah.
And that's when I became the official writer's assistant, but I've been with the show since on and off since season 1. They shot in Atlanta, and then they would come and do pickups here in Los Angeles,
yeah.
And every time they did pickups, I would get hired back by Karen and Joe, two of the producers on the show, and when they called and said they were coming back full-time for season 3, I was the first person they hired.
Oh, wow. So what was the – that's really cute. But what was the role that you were doing just as a sort of a casual or a freelancer, I guess, like with season 1?
I was just a PA.
Oh, okay.
I answered an ad on – I think it was productionnotices.com or something. Mm-hmm. The ad was just like, we need a PA for 2 days. And I was like, well, I'm unemployed and I'm a PA. I should probably take this job.
Cool.
And so I sent them an email and they said, be at this place at such and such time. And I got there and it was Teen Wolf.
Oh, wow. That's so weird. Is that how stuff works in Los Angeles? You can like answer a job and then you're like, oh, this is actually like a really big thing or whatever. Like, it's insane. Like, how did you get into that? Were you always doing like PA stuff for the film industry, or is it just, you know, really random that this is where you've ended up?
Yeah, well, I moved out here in 2006, and the only thing that really got me out here was I was working at a video store in Alabama, where I'm from, and they were opening up a branch in Culver City, and they asked me to be a manager there, and I was like, well, I want to move to Los Angeles, and this is the best way to do it. So I did that, and was just very unhappy working there, and I quit, and then I started looking for work. And through Craigslist, I got my first couple of jobs, and that led to me being a producer's assistant, which led to some other jobs. And then I worked on the first season of Community.
Wow.
And then I was unemployed for a couple of years, and then I found that ad on production notices, and here I am years later.
It's so insane. Sometimes I just think about, yeah, the whole, like, you know, the film industry, Hollywood industry, and how, like, just so many jobs exist within it in such a small, like, you know, relatively small space of, like, one city, and everything revolves around it, and how, not easy, but, like, you know, how much, I guess, opportunity. Like, for example, if I wanted to work in the entertainment industry in Sydney, you know, it's, you know, a lot of people wanting, I guess, a job in a very small pool, and just I suppose people come from all over the world to go to Los Angeles to try and do similar things, but it's just crazy to me the way the industry there works, and just,
right.
I love it, but yeah. So you said that's sort of how you got into it, and how you got into, you picked up the jobs via moving to Los Angeles, but was that kind of your ambition to become, you know, to be working in the industry, or to be working, you know, in the writing or the production part of the industry, or is it sort of something that's happened that you fell into?
No, I knew I wanted to be a filmmaker since the eighth grade. And then I went to college and studied film there, and then right after college I really latched on to writing as the thing that I wanted to do. I've been writing the whole time and all of that, but I thought I was going to be a producer / editor, because I really enjoy producing other people's work and helping them get stuff made, and enjoy editing, so I was like, all right, I'll just do that. And but I kept writing the whole time, but it was just for fun. But then right when I graduated, I was working on, you know, this really bad script, and I just realized that that's what I wanted. I didn't want to do anything else other than be a writer, and that's been my ambition ever since.
Cool. That's cool. Just to get into sort of the first, I guess, a little bit of a, you know, nitty-gritty of what the role currently entails and what you guys do there, what is sort of, I guess, a typical work week like for you? Like, you know, as a writer's assistant, like, are we talking about stuff like fetching coffee, or are we talking about stuff like research, all of the ways that, you know, someone can, you know, kill a man with two fingers, or, you know, that kind of thing? Like, how do you assist, and what kind of tasks happen or with the writers, or, you know, putting together things for in a typical week, I guess?
Well, I do get coffee. That happens a lot, although that has kind of fallen off just a little bit, because we ended up getting some coffee machines in our office, in our writer's room, so I don't go to Starbucks that much anymore. Mm-hmm. I do get lunch for the writers on days when we're shooting on location, or if our call time is so late that or is so wonky that the crew lunch won't fall at lunchtime. So I do that, but then I also take notes during all of our daily sessions, and I do research ways to kill a person with two fingers, you know, because, like, we'll be talking about something, and you know, Jeff is a big fan of specificity in a script and in dialogue. So it's not like, you know, Stilinski is like, oh, this man was shot with a gun. No, we need to know he was shot with a 357 Magnum, you know, or something like that. You know, not that that's happened. That's just an example. But
Sheriff Stilinski's going to die.
No, okay, we can't be having these rumors flying around.
I'm
no,
joking.
So, yeah, but I mean, he very much likes knowing exactly how something works, you know, because
we have
great fans who watch the episodes, and who, like, you know, when they see something in an episode, they look it up to see what that is, you know, and things like that, you know, because we do introduce a lot of new and interesting things on the show, and we just try to make it as correct as possible. So he, you know, he'll say, we'll look up how this works or how that works, and I'll, you know, I'll find some links and just put it all into an email and send it to him and all the writers, and then, you know, everyone will look over it, and he'll find what he likes, and we put it into the episode.
So. Cool. I imagine that kind of stuff, you know, one of the things I sort of think about when I think about, like, things having to, you know, be researched is, like, medical, like, things as well, like, how the correct, like, medical procedure, you know, even for, you know, giving someone a shot, or, you know, what, however it works, so.
No, we do all of that, and a lot of it doesn't even make it into, like, dialogue, but it's just something that we need to know because the actors are going to know, you know, like when Seth Gilliam is examining a dog or something, you know, I mean, he doesn't want to just be like poking it and be like, oh, this looks like something a vet would do. It's like, no, what would a vet actually do? And then on the day we say, here's what we're going to do because this is how you do a little checkup on a dog. And the same thing with I guess a really good example is the gun that Argent, Allison, and Isaac try to sell to Katashi.
Yeah.
In 3B. I mean, that's like a real thing, you know, and we were like, oh, you know, it came up in the room that, you know, how about, you know, they're selling one of Argent's prized guns or something like that. And then, you know, we can't just say, oh, he sells a gun.
Yeah. You
know, that's not interesting. And so we spent, you know, I spent a long time trying to figure out what gun it was. And all the writers were looking up interesting types of weapons and things like that. And then, you know, finding something that's really cool, like the over-under pistol that we used and all of that. And I think we found one that was French from like the 1700s. And we're like, oh, well, you know, the Argents come from France and all that type of stuff. How can we take something and make it part of our world? And that's actually just a lot of fun where it's like, oh, this is a little moment that we can make interesting and specific and something worthwhile. So,
yeah, I could probably ask questions about this all day, actually. Karen, do you have anything in mind that you wanted to ask in terms of this kind of, research and things like that and, you know, moments where it's really made a difference, moments where maybe it could have made a difference or something like that?
Yeah, actually, it's funny that you bring up that gun that Argent was selling because I remember very specifically after that episode aired, like, trying to look up that gun because I thought it was so beautiful and I wanted to know more about the history and stuff like that. So you're absolutely right that the fans go through and, you know, we always want to learn more and we always want to expand the universe of Teen Wolf. So I think it's amazing that you guys take the time to go into such detail because it really matters. It might not always be, you know, a huge detail on screen, but those background things is what that's what fans love to look for and to really dig into. And I've always been so impressed by, you know, how much the actors probably learn while they're shooting scenes like this and how, you know, Melissa Ponzio probably knows a lot more about how to be a nurse than the average person. So I always think that's right. Really awesome. Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, we, you know, again, you know, I mean, it's always much more fun to base everything in reality. I mean, granted, you know, you can have a show like, you know, since we're a genre show, we can really do whatever we want. I mean, we've got werewolves in our show, you know, but it is much I prefer having shows where, you know, like werewolves are our buy. You know, the supernatural world is the one thing we can get away with where it's like, just believe that we have werewolves and monsters on our show. And then everything else, we actually need to adhere to reality.
That's exactly what I've always said about the show, that the only thing about it that's unrealistic is that it's a supernatural concept, whereas everything else is, like, very, 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 very real, and it's not a heightened version of reality. Whereas on, like, comedy, the speech itself, like the way people talk, is a heightened version of reality or something like that.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we have, you know, we have crazy stuff in our show, but everything starts from a place of reality. Mm. You know, like that gun, like the gun that you see isn't a real gun. I mean, that's not real, but it's like we started from the real type of weapon and then kind of made our version of it using real history and then a history we incorporated into it and things like that. I mean, you know, because obviously, you know, you'll find something really cool, you know, in your research, and then it's like, oh, but that doesn't fit exactly with the story we're telling in this particular episode, so we just tweak it a little bit, you know, to make it fit, and you know, that's just always a lot of fun, but it what really matters is that you're always starting from reality, that you can actually Google this thing and find it, you know, because then it just brings a greater sense of realism to the show, instead of everything's just crazy all over the place, and we're just making it up as we go, you know, I mean, that's just not as much fun.
Yeah. Another thing that, you know, I've heard, you know, Jeff mentioned before as well is obviously keeping track of the show's own canon or, you know, whether it's stuff that you're inventing for the show or just continuity. So I was curious about, you know, if your job has anything to do with that, with like continuity checking or keeping track of, you know, things that have happened before, or what some of like the weirdest stuff you'd have to keep track of, I guess.
Oh no, we have a show bible for the mm-hmm. show that includes an outline of the history of the show. So yeah. Anytime a date is mentioned or an event, you know, we really try to stick away from dates
yeah.
to things, just because the continuity gets really difficult at times. Mm. And but anytime like a new event is mentioned or, you know, a date or anything like that, we have an outline that starts all the way, you know, goes all the way back to like there's a little bit that's about Argents in France.
Yeah. You know, like 900 that. Years ago, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and then we have, you know, dates leading up until this season, you know, and we do keep track of the continuity. Like, I mean, I can tell you, like, we have even like exactly what day of the week episodes take place on and what the date is, because our show is so serialized and the stories mm-hmm. are so compressed that each season takes place in about a month or a month yeah. and a half time. Yeah. You know, we're not, our stories are so fast paced that we don't really have lots of time between episodes, you mm-hmm. know, so it feels like, you know, like we've been on, you know, this is our fifth season, but not a lot of time has passed in Beacon Hills. You know, because, I mean, they're seniors now and or, you know, and they were what, sophomores or whatever when they started, you know, I can't remember, but off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, only about a year or so of time has passed, you know, and we have to keep track of all of that. And it's just really hard. Oh, no, it's actually more than a year now, but it's more than a year now. But it is difficult to, and that in itself creates problems. You know, because of how fast our stories take place, where it's like, you know, like we feel like we need a breather sometimes, you know, that the characters need a breather. But then it's like, oh, but oh, my God, the Duroc is out there killing people. So we can't rest on our laurels and things like that. But
you don't really have any like filler episodes or like, oh, this is a chill episode where everyone has a funny plot about ice cream, because yeah, it's all totally. Like, yeah,
we don't. Especially because we have such a our seasons have such a smaller order. Like this current season, season 5 will have 20 episodes, but we're breaking it up into two 10 episode halves, and each of those is a story. You know, and then when you put it all together, it is one big story. But I mean, on shows that have like 22 or 24 episodes a year, you know, it's like they can have episodes where you spin you're basically spinning your wheels, and the characters really aren't doing anything with the overall plot.
Yeah.
But we have so little time to actually tell our story. Yeah. You know, we get 40 minutes a week, and then only, you know, 20 episodes or 10 episodes, you know, per half to do it. We never get the turn off, and all the characters are running at a, you know, 100 miles a minute. So
it's okay. They can go for ice cream for like the 9 months that they're not on the air. It's fine.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. You know, there has been a passage of time between 4 and between 5. I'm sure they had a lot of ice cream.
Yeah. Like, I think that, you know, that we just don't see the calm time.
Exactly. It's because there's no drama in Scott and Kira picking out their favorite ice cream at the ice cream shop. But oh my God, Scott, you know, Scott's favorite, you know, flavor isn't there, and he wolfs out and all that.
I mean, we've had some pretty dramatic discussions about ice cream amongst the five of us members before, so.
That's true, actually. It could make for some blood, but yeah. What are your feelings on mint choc chip, Will?
I do not like mint choc
chip. Yes!
But only because I don't like mint.
Okay.
Peppermint me neither. Stuff
and all that just doesn't do it for me at all.
How do you feel about Cherry Garcia ice cream?
I honestly don't think I've ever had it.
Oh, yeah, you need to try it.
I know.
That's weird. But yeah, we have had some bloodthirsty ice cream discussions. But anyway, moving on from that. My question, I guess, just sort of to finish off with the research and continuity, is, are you able to tell us just off the top of your head some of the like weirdest or funniest things that you've had to research or keep track of for canon? Whether it's like, hey, remember this date, because, and it's, you were like, really, we need that? Or something that you researched that you were like, I can't believe that this is something that is part of my job, like the strangest or funniest things that have come up?
Actually, no, there isn't. I was struggling over this question in the document earlier, and I was just like, I don't have any funny stories about random continuity stuff that I hold on to. It's mainly just because everything on our show is so dire. that there Fair really enough. Isn't, you know, it's like, you know, I guess maybe I could have kept track of the different color scarves Isaac wore or things like that. No, there really isn't anything that's like, oh my God, I can't believe I have to keep track of.
No, fair enough. This,
whatever, you know, but yeah. So.
Fair enough. Well, I was going to ask, what about research-wise? Like, what's the thing that, you know, Jeff has said to you that you were like, you know, find this, and you're like, you know, has there ever been one that's just been like, whoa, like either really awesome or really crazy or just, the you know, really weird in terms of research that you just did not expect to come up?
Before I was the writer's assistant, somewhere towards the beginning of season three, Jeff is, I think since I met him, he knew I wanted to be the writer assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then he would shoot me emails, be like, can you look into this? Or can you do this, you know, do that. And, I remember he sent me an email that just said, research the Nemeton or what a Nemeton is. And I was like, I have no idea what this is, but I was like, you know what? I want to be in the writer's room, so I will do whatever it takes. And so, you know, I did a whole bunch of research on the Nemeton, which is, you know, the grove of trees and all that type of stuff. And, you know, I sent it to him and it became part of the show, you know? Wow. So, I mean, that was like my first experience with it. Cause you know, we were getting, you know, that was the season where we were getting into the really awesome and cool Druid stuff.
Mm.
And when I watched season two, I, you know, have Akanema being on the show. I was like, oh my God, what the hell is this? You know, and because, you know, of course, after season one, it's like, oh, it's all werewolves. And then we get the Akanema. And then with season three, it's like, oh my God, we get Druids and the Duroc and the Alpha Pack. And then later on in 3B, you know, my favorite stuff with, you know, the Kitsune lore and all that type of stuff. And so it's like every new season has its new thing. And that's always a lot of fun. So, but to long-windedly answer your question, yes, the first time I looked up stuff for the Nemeton was the weirdest thing because I was so new to the story of that season. So
that's cool, and it sort of shows a lot of trust as well. I really like that. But yeah, we'll move on from those, and I'm sure that, you know, stories will come up as we go. But yeah, Karen, do you want to sort of go into the next section about sort of the recent goings on with the crew?
Yeah, so Paley Fest just happened about a week or so ago, I think, or earlier this week. It's all a blur to me. And luckily we were there, and we got to talk to a bunch of people, and that's always really fun.
Well, not me. I was in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't there either.
Hypeable.
Our friend Kyle was there representing us, which was great. And but, you know, Paley is this really awesome thing. And what does it mean for you guys to attend something like Paley or even, you know, conventions in general? I mean, San Diego is a huge thing that you guys have been to before as well.
Yeah. Well, I think the conventions are always fun because that's just an opportunity for Jeff and the writers and the crew and, of course, the cast to meet fans, you know, because, I mean, that at the end of the day, that's, you know, who you're telling a story to, is you're creating the story that you want to tell and you're putting it out into the world, and you get to meet the people who are just devouring that story and love it as much as you do. And so with the conventions, that's definitely a great thing, and it's always fun for everybody. And, you know, just to get out there, and because I think, you know, when you're making a show for, you know, 6-7 months, you know, out of the year, you kind of lose sight of, or you forget, you know, all the love that everyone has for it, because you're like, oh wow, you know, it's like my call time is until 5 p.m. today, which means we don't wrap until 5 a.m. and all this type of stuff. And you're like, oh, this episode that's being broken is giving us a problem and all that. And then you get to go to a convention, and you're like, oh, that's right. It's because it's so much fun and because the fans are so great that's why we get to do this, you know? And so that's always great. But then being invited to Paley Fest just felt like it almost added this level of prestige to the show, you know, because, you know, I think we were the first MTV show to ever be there. And then, you know, like when I walked into the theater, to the Dolby Theater where they have the Oscars, there's this big banner that had like all the shows that were going to be there for Paley Fest, you know, and it's like Outlander and Scandal and these shows that are very good and that people really love. And then right there is, oh, look, there's Teen Wolf. there's this show about monsters and werewolves and cannibals, and it's right next to the Outlander picture, you know, and, you know, this, which is a heady historical drama. And then, oh, look, there's a picture of Kerry Washington from Scandal, which is a, you know, a big political thriller show. And I think that just, I think that was just a really good feeling, because it's, you know, genre shows, I feel like, don't get represented very well on, or I guess people don't look at genre shows as being maybe completely worthwhile a lot, because it's like, oh, it's a genre show. It's a show with, you know, hunky kids and werewolves. Like, I mean, how good can it really be? You know, and whenever I tell people I work on Teen Wolf, you know, they always kind of make that face. You know, that's like Teen Wolf. I'm like, wait a minute. Let me keep talking.
Yeah.
And just watch the show. Just watch the pilot, and you'll realize it's really good. And I'll be completely honest. I remember, I guess maybe it was in 2010 or at some point in 2011, my roommate and I were watching Jersey Shore, because we were really into that at the time. And I regret all of that now, of course. But they had the first commercial for Teen Wolf, you know, and we watched it. And I just remember being honestly not very impressed, because I was like, oh, it's a Twilight TV show, and who cares about Twilight? And then some number of months later, I got hired onto Teen Wolf without even realizing it. And while I was there, like late one night, Atiyah Henry, actually the woman who hired me for season one, gave me all the scripts. And I just kind of lackadaisically read the pilot, and I was like, this isn't going to be very good. And I devoured the pilot. It was so good from the first page to the last page. And then I went home over the weekend and read the other 11 scripts for season one. And I was like, oh my God, the show is actually good. And who would expect that? You know? And so,
oh yeah. Trust me. We know.
We know. Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Is no one gives you a chance just because of the name Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
But then it's like, no, if you actually sat down and watched the show, it's really good. We don't, you know, we're not a frivolous genre teenage monster show. You know, we actually, this is important to us, and this is an important, you know, these are really good, important characters. And so, you know, again, another long-winded answer, to be walking into the Dolby Theater and see, you know, a picture of Tyler Posey and Holland, you know, like, or from a promotional picture last year, right next to Scandal and Outlander. It's just like, oh my God, we've made it. You know, we are being taken seriously. And so that was just a good feeling.
Yeah. I don't know if all of our listeners know exactly, like, everyone knows, you know, PaleyFest was going on, but do you guys kind of want to explain very briefly to listeners who aren't maybe super, like, working within the industry, like, what that means, basically? Like, you know, what the convention or what the event is like?
I've actually never been to PaleyFest.
Okay, well, how would you term it? Like, because it's not a convention. It's an upfront. So, like, how would you call it?
PaleyFest is, God, how would I call it? Yeah, it's not a convention. It's a festival that happens
for press, basically.
I wouldn't even say if it's really for press. It's just where shows that are held to a certain regard, you know, like this year is, you know, they have this great Salute to Comedy with Key and Peele and Broad City, you know, and then they've also got these panels for Girls and Scandal and Good Wife and Homeland and Outlander. And it's just where, you know, they choose shows that I believe have a certain amount of excellence in their storytelling and in just how much their fandom loves them, you know, and just being and allowing people to come and hear the cast and crew talk about working on a show that is loved by so many people, you know, and it's just, I think it's just a celebration of good television, good writing and good storytelling and also the fans, you know, that, I mean, obviously none of it is possible without the fans. And so it's just an opportunity for everyone to get together and talk. And it's just great.
Yeah.
It's great. Last year I went to the Lost panel.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of fun. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just, especially with a show like Lost that's reaching, you know, that last year it was 10 years since it first aired, you know, and getting to, see cast and crew again and just talk about how crazy it was to make the show. And the same thing, you know, with Teen Wolf is like we get together and we get to just talk about how crazy it is to make this awesome show that we love so much. So.
Yeah, it is really cool, and it's obviously an opportunity for a lot like of shows to either, you know, show new footage or, you know, give a little bit of a hint about their upcoming production. So obviously you were there at Paley. What was your kind of, I guess, favorite thing that was revealed by Teen Wolf at Paley, or, you know, the you know, thing you're most excited to hear them talk about? Obviously you knew what was going on behind the scenes, but that you're excited that's out there in the world, I guess.
I actually don't know, because okay, the thing I was most excited about with PaleyFest, honestly, was just, and the same thing that happened with being at BiteCon last year. BiteCon was my first convention experience.
Oh.
And with PaleyFest this year, it wasn't any new information. It wasn't any of the stories that really made me smile the broadest while I was there. It was just when the moderator was introducing everybody, mm-hmm. and everyone lost their shit. I'm sorry. I don't know.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
You know, everyone just lost their minds over every single character, you know, and that was just awesome and fun, you know, and that was just, I mean, I was grinning from ear to ear, you know, it was just so much fun, you know, just to see how much, you know, the fans love the show and love the cast and love the characters, you know, just because they're so, I mean, granted, you know, it's a monster show, but they're all relatable. You know, I don't think there's any character who's been on the show that you can't find a correlation in your own life, you know, or who you didn't know someone like that in high school and things like that, you know, monster parts aside, of course. Yeah. But, you know, so when, you know, they're, you know, when it's like Holland and Tyler and Dylan and Arden, you know, and everyone is just losing their minds over every actor who's walking out. That was just that for me. That was the best part.
That's cute.
Yeah, it was just great. I mean, I literally every time we see a trailer or something like that, because Jeff is showing us like all the cuts of trailers and things like that for everyone else. And literally every time it ends, I'm like, we work on the best fucking show,
you
know, just because it just makes me feel so good that, you know, we work on a show that people love so much. You know, it feels good, you know, that you're creating something that makes someone else feel good. Yeah. You know, that's just amazing. I mean, who wouldn't want to be a part of something like that?
For absolute sure, which is actually a little bit about what we wanted to talk about with. Okay. Yeah, Karen, did you want to go on to extend on that a bit? I mean, I know we've talked about this with everyone, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is honestly, like, one of my favorite questions to ask, because we hear it so much that the atmosphere on set is just, there's so much collaboration, there's so much love for each other, and you would think it would get old hearing it time after time, but honestly, it doesn't.
Probably like, oh, this again.
Yeah, no, I love it. So, you know, is there anything that just off the top of your head that just reaffirms that everybody on Teen Wolf just loves each other so much?
Yes. everyone, it's a great atmosphere. It is really good. And you will, whenever I have to go out to our base camp where the trailers are and stuff like that, you know, Dylan and Tyler are just sitting on the steps talking with Kara, who is our base camp PA, you know, or people are just wandering around and just having a good time, or, you know, Tyler's playing guitar somewhere, or, you know, the other day at lunch, Kara and Tyler were sitting and they were just belting out songs together, you know, and it's just, there's just, our show has a great sense of camaraderie and just a great sense of family, you know, that we get to make this, you know, we're making a TV show. We're not, you know, curing cancer or anything like that, but we're telling a story that people just love, you know, and I feel like, you know, like, you know, going to PaleyFest or to a con, you just get energized again, you know, when everyone's screaming for you and how much they love the show. And then you just come on to set and you're like, and you know, it's true. We do have hard days. You know, we have tough schedules just because, you know, our show looks really good at nighttime, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So that means we have to shoot all night, and that just, you know, throws our schedules into chaos, but it's always worth it. And the crew never complains. The crew doesn't quit. You know, it's just great, you know, like everyone wants to be there because they're having a good time and they get to work on something so much fun. And, you know, they're really, it's not like they're like any, like, you know, bad eggs in the group or anything like that. Everyone is happy. And like, you go to, you know, you like go to craft service and they're, oh, look, you know, there's Shelly, you know, eating some carrots and stuff like that. And you say hi and she says hi right back. And she's just like, hey, what's up? What's going on? You know, and everyone is just happy to be there. So I know it might feel like a broken record, you know, that everyone says, but the problem that, you know, it's not a problem at all, but the problem is it's just true. So you don't get any, you're not going to find a different answer just because there isn't a different answer to give. And I think that's great. So, yeah.
No, I totally, totally love it. Obviously, you know, though sometimes sad things happen. And, yes. You know, we, you know, learned, I think just before they went on stage for PaleyFest that Tyler Hoechlin's not returning as a series regular.
Right.
But people are kind of acting like he died. And I just wanted to know if you had any, like, words of advice to those people who might need to calm down a little bit, basically. or just, I guess, what that, you know, what that kind of means, I suppose, for the show and, you know, probably not what we could expect, but because you probably either don't know or can't tell us that. But, you know, there's all sorts of characters on the show that aren't necessarily, like, you know, series regular is like, you know, one of the six kids in the intro. You know, there are a lot of different levels down from that. Obviously, Derek Hale has not, like, you know, died or exploded or anything. So is there anything that you, you know, wanted to say about that whole situation, basically?
To all the people who are freaking out, let's just take a moment and calm down. And like Jeff said at PaleyFest, Derek's story isn't exactly over yet, you know, so let's just see what happens. You know, that's all I can say. I can't really say anything else without accidentally divulging secret information.
No, absolutely. But, fair enough.
But yeah. And even like Jeff said, you know, I mean, we have a great cast on our hands, but, you know, they want to try new things, you know, and like he said, you know, Tyler came to him and was like, hey, I made this movie and it was so much fun. I really want to try some new stuff. And Jeff isn't going to make anyone stay because that won't create a good atmosphere, you know. But I mean, but we didn't, you know, kill him or anything like that because it was like we know there's more left to tell with that character. And so we're just going to, you know, ease him out. But that doesn't mean he's gone for good.
I always really like that with shows. Like, I like shows that have, like, people that come back every now and then, and you're like, oh, this guy, I still like this guy, and, you know, like, and then people that aren't always in every episode, but that they really either had or have their own story that they can, you know, I think it adds a lot of depth to the world when there are people who can come in every now and then and, you know, basically bring some expansion, I guess, like make the world that you're seeing on screen a little bit bigger because they're bringing in new things from the outside. And I like that in all shows. Like one of my other shows that I do a podcast for, Glee, sorry, just had, like, it's about to have its like full series finale, but it just reintroduced, like in the last two episodes, a character that I love that's clearly going to be like the end game romance for Rachel Berry, like for Lea Michele, and I'm really stoked about that. So I really like characters coming and going. Like, I'd rather that than they were dead, like, you know.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things Jeff loves the most. Jeff loves big entrances.
Yeah.
You know? And so when you don't see a character for a while, that means they're just gonna come back in a big, massive way.
Oh God,
you know, you're just gonna be like, holy fucking shit, Derek's back, oh my God, my life is complete, you know, that type of thing. And it just will make it even better. It makes the wait even better.
Yeah.
You know, so
I think it's gonna be great. Like, I imagine it being hilarious and like it being some sort of ridiculous high school lurking or some sort of sarcasm and it just being hilarious. So yeah.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, let's go into a little bit, well, you can't, obviously, no spoilers, but let's talk a little bit about what it actually takes to prep a new season. So, Karen, do you want to go into this?
Yeah, so obviously, after a long hiatus, which there was one between season 4 and season 5, at least for us, I mean, you guys have obviously been working on this for a little while, but going into that new season, what's it like for you in your role, and what sort of prep is needed for a whole new year and a whole new sort of storyline for the characters?
Well, the prep for me is between, you know, seasons and all that is kind of negligible because in that time, Jeff is doing a lot of work on his own. Like, Jeff usually, like, we started writing The writer's room opened November 3rd of last year, and I think we'd been there. I think Jeff and Ian and Eric had been working for a couple of weeks before that, just kind of in and out of the office. But when all the writers assembled on the first week of November, Jeff laid out a big plan, you know, a big idea that he wanted to do, and then the prep starting then is just breaking that big idea down into pieces and to, you know, and how are we going to handle this over 2 10 episode halves, and then we just get to work where it's just a lot of brainstorming. It's just a lot of blue sky stuff for the first month or so, where it's just, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if Kira does this? What if someone else does this? You know, and also a big thing we deal, you know, that we jump into first and foremost is what is the status quo of all the characters after the previous season?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, where did everyone end up? You know, where did everyone's story end last season? And what does that mean for them when we pick them up now? And that, you know, we do a lot of work and a lot of we spend a lot of time thinking about that, just because that will obviously lead right into what is going to be important for the new season. And that will almost not dictate, but definitely help start shaping character stories for the season. And yeah,
fair enough. Now, can you confirm the truth to the rumors that you are heading up a particular episode this season as a writer rather than as an assistant?
I will be writing an episode this season. I'm not exactly sure which episode yet, but it is going to happen.
That's really cool that they, like, you know, that they move people up, or, like, you know, that they, you know, that they look at their own team and, you know, and what they want and what they're capable of, and they're like, you know what, yeah, you can do this, rather than, I guess, not expanding the circle. So I was just again, you say you don't know what one it is, which is, you know, totally understandable, but I was curious about how that works. Like, if Jeff has an overview, are you like, okay, so episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, okay, so this in episode 8, you know, it's gonna be Kira and Scott, you know, going for ice cream. Will, you can write whatever you want in this episode, but the main plot has to be this. Is that kind of how it works, or is it, you know, your own idea for a story?
The way we break our episodes is, at the beginning of the season, you know, we talk for a long time about what Jeff's ideas are, and then we all start throwing our own ideas in there and shaping the overall story of the season and figuring out who our bad guys are going to be, what it is they want, how that affects our main cast. And then what we start doing is we have a big map. You know, Jeff, we use in the room this product called Mind Map.
Yeah.
And we break it down and we start just throwing ideas up there and list and just throwing them into different episode under different episode numbers. And just being like, oh, well, we think this should happen here. And if that happens in episode 3, then in episode 7, the correlating, you know, scenes need to be taking place and things like that.
Mm.
And then we just start, we do that as much as we can up until we're like, all right, we are ready to start writing an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole writing staff together breaks each episode one at a time, going in order. We always, you know, and usually we'll have ideas for other episodes later on down the line, and we'll stop for a second and throw in some ideas into the next map for that episode. But then we come back to episode 501, and we break it all together, and we write a very detailed outline that's about 15 or 16 pages, and then whoever's writing that particular episode goes off. They write their draft, and then it comes back, and notes are given on it, and Jeff does a polish, and usually goes in front of the cameras.
I was just curious as well, has that sort of been, obviously you haven't been heading up the particular episodes the whole time, but has there been a change in that process since you first came on the show? Like, has it been, like, streamlined? Did it used to be messier, or has the process been pretty consistent since you started?
No, the process has been very consistent. I think Jeff found the rhythm of the writing and of breaking episodes that he wanted in season 1,
yeah,
and has stuck with it ever since, just because it works very well for us. You know, that this is the best way for us to break this particular story. So.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
Yeah.
Cool.
So one of the things that I was really excited for coming into season 5 was this creature feature competition. I thought that was such a cool idea to incorporate the fans and get something new into the show. And I've always been a proponent of new creatures on the show and expanding the universe and figuring out what exists in the Teen Wolf world. So how did that idea come about? And, you know, what did you think personally of the winning entry?
Well, the winning entry looks really cool, and it's definitely something we haven't seen before. So that was fun, you know, and but then also because all the entrants were on the Teen Wolf Tumblr. So like when we would go on breaks and stuff, I would just scroll through the Tumblr looking at everything. and every single one was good. And I was just like, oh, well, this would be great. And this would be great. And this one's great. And we need 3 of these, you know, and something like that. And then it was very overwhelming just because of all the cool ideas and all the creativity coming in. But then as we were breaking more of this season, we got to a point where we realized we knew where we could put the creature in the episode and how it would work organically. And then it was just as we were kind of figuring out or discovering the place we could do it, we found the one we wanted. You know, it just kind of it was all very, I guess, serendipitous a little bit. And it all just kind of worked out. It worked out very well. So we were very happy with the story we were breaking at that moment. And then when we found the creature, we were like, oh, well, this seems to work perfectly. So let's snag it and see what happens.
And the creature is terrifying. Like, I was looking through the different angles that the artist had on the creature, and I was like, I don't know if I really want this on my screen because it's probably going to give me nightmares.
It has some impressive teeth, and it's interesting. But it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. This was a very... If it was a very interesting contest idea, and I'm honestly surprised it took 5 seasons for it to happen. You would think that something like that might happen pretty early on, but I think it's going to work out, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun when you actually see what we're doing with it.
It's gross.
Well, that's the way we do it.
Just saying.
Yep.
Okay, so creatures aside, or creatures incorporated, each season usually has a pretty solid mythology. Like, you know, season 4 had the South American, and then before that, Japanese. Before that, like, Druid. Presumably, there'll be a particular mythological culture flavoring season 5, or is it going to be more of a mix this year?
It's actually a little bit more of a mix this year. We have a couple of really awesome mythological elements that we've been talking about from the past couple of seasons, but could never really find a way to make it work with what with the stories of those seasons as we were breaking them. But then we hit upon some ideas that we really liked, and we're kind of pulling from a lot of different places. It's not going to be like...
all Japan all the time.
Yeah, like season 3B, how that perfectly, where Jeff discovered kitsunes and was like, this is a cool thing, we need to really look into this, and how that mythology gave us so much to play with, you know, because it gave us, you know, the kitsune, but then it gave us also the no kitsune. Mm. You know, so we have this season's gonna be a little bit more of a mix of things, but it's all really good stuff, and it's been a lot of fun doing research and looking at, you know, pictures on, like, it's like, you know, you find an idea that you like, and then you're like, well, let's just see what Google has to say about this. And then you find tons of this artwork, and you're like, oh my God, we need to do stuff like this. And it's just been a lot of fun. And I think the bad guys we have this season are new, and they're going to be exciting.
Mm. I'm anxious. Well, yes. So obviously you're very enthusiastic about the show. You know, you've been, you know, a big fan of it since working on it, which is nice. And you've, you know, very, very genuinely, which is really nice to see. So we just want to talk to you a little bit about what, you know, some of your favorite aspects of the show are, you know, either, you know, in looking forward to, you know, creating for them or just watching them. So we'll go through a little bit of that if it's okay.
Yeah.
Karen, do you want to start off there?
Yes, because obviously the first question here has to be, who is your favorite character?
Oh, my favorite character is Kira.
No wonder you like our podcast because she's such a nerd.
She is. And let me just jump in really quick. I love the podcast. I love it so much. I discovered it at BiteCon because y'all moderated the alpha panel.
Yeah, Karen and I did that with Jeff. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't know who y'all were up until that point. And as we were leaving, I was like, "Who were the moderators of the panel?" And they were like, "Oh, they run that podcast." And I was like, "What podcast?" And so I found it, and I blew through like every single episode.
Oh, no.
So no, I wish
we
I
thought you were a spy.
No, I wish I'd known about it from the beginning. I loved it so much, and it was just so much fun. You know, I love podcasts, and especially when it's podcasts of fans talking about something they love. You know, it's just fun. And then just listening to y'all, you know, with guests, you know, breaking down episodes and talking about your favorite parts and all the stuff you liked and didn't like and fan theories and all that type of stuff was so much fun. And it was great. So I love the podcast. Thank you. It's so much fun.
Thank you.
I'm going to cry now.
Yeah. Thank you. We wondered if, because Will, you know, I hope that he doesn't mind me saying, definitely started reaching out to the podcast and being like, where's the new episode and stuff? And we were like, okay. And we thought that maybe he was being paid to spy on us.
No. That's. Well, that was because I listened to all of them in like a week or maybe 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
And then what happened was it was, I think when I finished, it was like maybe a month or so before the show came back.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what am I going to do with all my time? I now have nothing to do, you know? And so just, and I remember shooting all that email. I was just like, I need to know when this is going to be happening again. So I can participate. Yes.
No, good. Well, I'm surprised it's taken us this long to get you on, except that, you know, we thought you were being, like that you were giving us platitudes, not that you were that much of a nerd. No. But that's great.
Not at all.
Yes,
I love Kira. Kira, when we started breaking that character and figuring out who she was going to be, I was basically smitten with that character from the beginning, where it was just, because everyone on our show up until that point is really cool, and everyone is really cool, and they've got their shit together, even though they're high school. You know what I mean? Everyone is just is cool and interesting, and then to have this character come in who is just her own character in her own right and really cool, but she's, you know, but she's kind of klutzy, and she likes pop culture stuff. And, you know, it was just wonderful that she was so different from all of our characters who had already been established. And she was just like a breath of fresh air coming into the show. And she's just adorable. And it's amazing. And I can watch her falling downstairs all day long. It's just great. Because she doesn't, you know, not to say that any of our characters do this, but she doesn't try to pretend to be anybody else.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
She's just like, this is who I am. I don't know how else to be, you know? And of course all of our characters are like that, you know? I mean, granted you have like Lydia for a while was putting on somebody, you know, like she, you know, like Lydia is very different from season 1 to season 4, you know, she's not the same person anymore. And that's great, you know? And all of our characters so far have had secrets and things to hide and things like that and all that. And granted, you know, Kira's had her own secrets with, you know, like when she had her kitsune aura around her and all that type of stuff. And but it's just, she's never pretended to be anybody else. That she is just like, I don't know how else to be, this is how I am, and y'all are awesome, we should all be friends.
Yeah,
you know, so it's, yeah, she's just the best.
One of my favorite things about Kira, actually, which I was really glad that Kyle, our Hyperville correspondent, got to ask this at PaleyFest, because it was a question that I asked him to ask. But it was he asked Arden about basically Kira. I think what you're talking about is really, really visible in Kira's reaction to seeing Scott as a werewolf for the first time. Because when Allison sees him for the first time, and even when his mother sees him for the first time, it's like, oh, I'm so traumatized. Oh, my God. And I have to get used to you. But then Kira sees him for the first time. And it's like she's like in awe. And he's really nervous. And she's just like, oh, my God, everything I've ever dreamt about is coming true. And it's
absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah, no, it's great. She's very much a character who you introduce her to something that should be scary.
Mm.
You know, that she's not going to see it immediately like that. You know, she's going to find something good in it. You know, and when she saw you know, and I think a lot of it has to do with that Kira saw Scott fight. Mm. She saw Scott fight the Oni in the previous episode, and Scott wasn't, you know, being a monster towards her. Now, I think it would be different, you know, if she just turned around a corner and Scott roared at her, you know, for the first time. Then he'd be like, okay, kind of a monster. But, you know, she saw him protecting her and protecting other people and his friends, you know, that, and she was just like, this isn't a monster, I see. This is just you. You know, this is just exactly who you are, and you don't need to change, you know, and that's great. And of course, you know, like all, you know, genre and science fiction and fantasy has that built into it where, you know, of course, you know, werewolves and vampires and monsters are allegories for something else, you know, and with her, she's just like, you got it. You're good. You don't need to be anything other than who you are, you know, and that's just, that's a good message, you know, cause that's, you know, that's just the way we should treat everybody, you know? And so that's just her, you know? So it's great.
I love that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned obviously starting out with the show, you know, before even really being official with the Nemeton, you know, research, but I was just wondering what's your favorite like episode or plot, I guess, that you've worked on objectively as well, or that you've worked on, you know, since being part of the show.
Well, I guess I've got two answers for that. My favorite plot kind of like story is all of the Kitsune stuff from 3B. Just because it was so different from the show. You know, season one is werewolves and season two is the Kanemo, which is I think a South American thing. You know, take that. But it was like a monster. And then, you know, season 3A, you get druid stuff and the Duroc and the Alpha Pack is of course more werewolves. But the Duroc, when all the druid stuff was introduced in 3A, it felt right for the world, for Beacon Hills. It just felt right. And then when we started talking about Kitsune stuff, I was like, this is completely outside of what we've ever done, and it's awesome. You know, it was just so different, because I don't think I ever would have thought about that, you know, to pitch a Japanese mythology. You know, it probably never would have come to mind. You know? Then when Jeff came in and pulled up some pictures of like Kitsune's, and he's like, this is what we're doing. It was just like, this is gonna be so fucking cool. But yeah, that's my favorite kind of plot that we've ever worked on, just because, you know, in, you know, Dylan O'Brien was so good as Void.
Yeah.
And Aaron Hendry as the Nagitsune / Bandage Man was so good, and our Oni looks so good. And, you know, and Tamlin Tamita and Tom Choi as Kira's parents were just lovely and adorable. I love the dinner scene where it's like, you were going to make lasagna.
Yeah, I love them. So, I love the whole family so much.
It's wonderful. You know, that was just the most fun story wise. But I guess like episode wise, it's not even an episode that I had the most fun working on. It was when we shot the season two opening credit sequence, we did all of that at in this somewhere here deep in the valley, where near the Awkward stages, where Awkward was shooting, and we used a part of one of their stages, I think, to shoot the opening credits, and that was just so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, just because I was like the only PA there, so I was doing everything. So there's like, so you know, there's like the shot of Tyler, you know, in slow motion getting sprayed with water. That's me spraying him. I'm spraying him with water bottles, you know. And then there's, you know, and then Colton hits him from behind and all that. Well, I'm holding, you know, Colton is actually hitting a big kind of like karate mat with that I had taped baggies, Ziploc baggies full of water to, and I'm holding the mat and he's just crashing into me. And then you put those two shots together and you get that. And then like Holland, like disappearing into the darkness is like she's just stepping out and I'm holding her and like I'm stopping her from hitting a wall and things like that. And it's just, and I remember especially that shot in particular because there was so much light blasting on her because they were shooting it at such a high frame rate. They needed a ton of light to get it, and they were like, Will, just go stand against the wall and make sure Holland doesn't hit it. And I'm like, you can see me, guys. I'm standing right behind her. How is this a thing? And they were, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's good. And then they did it. They did like a whole bunch of takes. And then they showed me one of the takes. And the thing is about high speed photography is the higher the frame rate, the darker the image.
Yeah.
So they were shooting like thousands of frames per second, which means they just had to blast her with light. And because of that, everything else that wasn't being hit by the light was just complete darkness. So you don't see me at all. And but that was
you're
just
there.
Yeah, but I'm there. And it was just so much fun. And, like, how they used to have those shots of, like, I guess, like, the woman covered in black goo or tar.
Yeah.
Whatever. And, like, that was a model they just covered with all the stuff standing in a little kiddie pool. And it was not interesting or sexy at all. It was very weird. But then, like, at the end of the day and all that, you know, like, oh, and, like, Tyler Hoechlin, you know, like, I have pictures of him getting, you know, baby powder thrown
that was the big thing we were disappointed about with Tyler Hoechlin leaving the show, is that he won't get to bake anymore.
Yes,
he won't get to play in his flour. But anyway, exactly. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, at the end of that day, it was like a 20-hour day or something like that. And the last thing, it was really interesting because it's just me and there mopping up the floor.
Yeah.
You know, and it looked like we were never there at the end of the day. And so that was just a ton of fun doing that. That was my first real, I think, Teen Wolf experience, where I was actually being a part of it in some way. It was just a lot of fun. So
that's really cool. That's a really cool story. I wouldn't have expected to hear that.
Yeah.
So, okay, favorite relationship, because we have to ask, can be romantic or platonic.
Okay. My favorite relationship is Scott and Kira. I think they have just a great chemistry together. I really, really loved Scott and Allison. And I loved season one was Romeo and Juliet, and I loved the complications created in season two after Allison was brought into the fold of the Hunter family and all of that. And I love all the drama that came with that. And that I feel like the first two seasons are a great, between Scott and Allison, are just a great relationship of how, like, it just this great arc of rising and falling and all of that. And it all felt very real based on, you know, decisions that were made by characters and then their families and just the world of Beacon Hills and the world of Teen Wolf. And it was just a lot of fun to watch. And then when Kira was introduced, again, it was that whole breath of fresh air, but I really just like the way they are together. It just feels really good. And so that's my favorite relationship. My favorite ship is Melissa and Stilinski. And I hope they get together one day. That would be pretty awesome.
Cool. Well, I was going to say, yeah, if you could include any, like, this is very spoiler territory because you are writing, but if you could include any plot or subplot of the show, what would you like to see? I suppose you could go really outlandish, like stuff that would never happen.
I know. I was thinking about this earlier, too, because I can't remember what we've talked about in the room and what we haven't. And so I don't know what to say. And I feel like anything I say could be a potential spoiler. Even, you know, and we've talked about some crazy stuff, but what would be something? Okay, here we go. Here's something. I did some research back in 3A. I was going to write a spec Teen Wolf episode, and I wanted it to be kind of a standalone episode with its own monster. And I was just looking up, I don't remember how I even got to it, but I was looking up, like, Romanian mythology.
Oh, yeah.
And I found, like, the story of the necromancer and the four horrors, and that just sounded fun. And so, and there's, like, oh, my God, I can't remember what it is now. Hold on a second. Let me pull it up. Let me see
That's
if I can.
That's cool.
Ah, crap. What was it called? They're, like, just these characters. It's kind of like, you know, it's, like, basically their version of, like, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, but they're just called the Four Horrors. And I thought that just sounded so crazy. And it was so weird and weird. I can't find it. But yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I looked up a lot of, there was some other stuff with like Romanian mythology, but also leading to all that was like, there was some good stuff on like Romanian gypsies and like the Romani and things like that. And I feel like there could be some fun stuff to mine with that part of Europe. And
a lot of that was like they had the, you know, people who went off and lived in the forest and were raised by wolves. Like a lot of the, you know, original lycanthropy came from there as well.
Right. Yeah. And also a lot of that had to deal with like Romani Jews and Jewish folklore and then like the golem or the golem and things like that. That would be a lot of fun. So who knows? Maybe one day. Season 9, we'll introduce a golem.
I know I would, that would be cool. But yeah, obviously there's going to be things that you know, have very much on the cards that we can't talk about at the moment. So that's fine.
Yeah.
So kind of going along with, you know, what you would like to see as a subplot, what about any guest stars that you would like to see on the show? And what kind of maybe creature or character would you like to see them portray?
Oh, man. There's an actor who's a great character actor named... crap. Hold on. Let me look up his name before I say it wrong. Isaiah Whitlock Jr. is just one of my favorite all-time character actors. He was like in 25th Wire. He was in that movie, that wonderful comedy, Cedar Rapids. He was on The Wire. He's just a really great character actor, and I've always wanted to work with him. So if we could get him on the show in some way, and that's just from an acting standpoint, I think that would be amazing. But from like a genre standpoint, I think Jeffrey Combs would be really awesome. He was in that movie. He was in the Reanimator movies. He was in The Frighteners. He was in he's been in just tons and tons of horror films over the last couple of decades, and it's just a supposed to be a really fun guy to work with, and I think he could be a lot of fun. Like if Barrow, like maybe if Barrow had a brother, it would be him.
Oh.
Yeah.
Barrow was interesting.
Barrow was having Doug Jones on the set was incredible. There was actually one moment I forgot to bring in my Pan's Labyrinth DVD because I wanted to get him to sign it, but he was like in between takes, he was just kind of wandering around by himself, just doing the dialogue and just moving his hands and all this, and it reminded me of a bit from the behind the scenes footage of Pan's Labyrinth where he's doing the exact same thing but dressed up as Pan, and so he's just on these giant stilts walking around and just doing the dialogue to himself and all this, and it was great. It was just wonderful. So again, another long-winded answer, Isaiah Whitlock Jr. and Jeffrey Combs would be awesome.
Cool. I was going to say, speaking of Doug Jones, is that your favorite guest star that you've had on then, or who else have you really enjoyed having on?
Yeah, I think he's my favorite guest star, who was kind of like in and out for an episode. And yeah, he was just a lot of fun because I think he just brought a real craziness to the show, especially with the character we created for him. And plus, also, it was just so interesting to see him act without makeup on. Because, you know, he's been in so many movies as monsters and creatures that you're like, oh, wait, he's a really good actor. He doesn't really need to be in the makeup. You know, he's just able to do that really, really well. And so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. He usually does have that kind of whole, you know, inside a costume thing. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so just to wrap up, I guess. We've talked a bit about the podcast and conventions and stuff like that. But just... I guess what's your favorite part about the fans and the fandom of Teen Wolf? Obviously, you know, throwing right back to, you know, the continuity stuff and everything that you've experienced with, I guess, the fans of this show.
My favorite part of the fans and the fandom is just the enthusiasm for how much everyone loves the show. It's just so much fun, and it just makes you feel really good that you're working on something that people enjoy and are enthusiastic about. And that's the best part. And like going to ByteCon and seeing the people who had like the little pins and the bumper stickers and the posters of all this wonderful artwork that they had created for characters of our show. And the young woman whose name I can't remember at the moment, but who made dolls. And, you know, it's just the enthusiasm and the way they're able to pour that enthusiasm into artwork and things like that is just amazing. I love what our show can do for our fans and how it makes them feel, and how then it in turn makes us feel really great that we're able to share in this awesome show.
That's nice. Thank you. Well, thank you for giving back in kind, I suppose.
Oh, I feel like that's part of the equation. You know, that it's a give and take. You know, it's not all one way or the other. So it's just fun. Come on. It's fun.
All right. So, Karen, do you want to wrap it up there?
Yes, of course. You know that we couldn't let you leave without asking this question.
Okay.
So you, as Will, would you take the bite if it was offered to you?
I would not take the bite. It seems like a lot of drama comes with it and a lot of monsters. And I am completely happy and satisfied with my life the way it is at the moment. So I feel like I don't, for super strength and super speed and super hearing and healing ability, I feel like having to deal with Kanemas and Duroks and Nogitsunes and Wendigos on a daily basis would probably get old and tiring after a while. So I would rather just go to the beach and hang out.
Fair enough. And
the bandage man walking up behind me and telling and you know telling me riddles. I'm like, oh, come on, Nuggets and A, just let me have a beach day.
We've wanted a beach day episode for a while, so you know if you're looking for some filler for your episode, you know, ice cream, beach day, you know, all of these great ideas, like, you know. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, is just unless there's anything that you wanted to kind of say or, you know, either to us or to the fandom or anything like that, we will wrap up.
I love the podcast. Obviously, I've gushed about you already. And I love the fans and how happy they are. And I love just how enthusiastic everyone is about the show. And I love, love, love that I get to be a part of something that is important to so many people. That's just a really good feeling, and it makes it completely worthwhile.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, we are very happy to have you on and to, you know, obviously carry on doing the podcast. We've been going for a while now, so it's good that we get to keep going for a little while more. Yeah, Karen, was there anything else we needed to say before we finish up?
You know, we never announced on the podcast, we announced it on Twitter, but I'm not the only one going to San Diego this year.
Oh, that's true. The podcast, Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, just saying, is actually being registered as press for San Diego Comic-Con this year, which is, in case people don't know, a pretty big deal, not just because Comic-Con is a pretty big deal, but I really didn't think that they'd give it to us because we just cover one show. We will be, you know, trying to provide, you know, coverage from, you know, panels, side projects and stuff like that, you know, obviously, like, Maze Runner, like, whatever happens with all of the cast at Comic-Con, but we did get granted that, so Donya and I will also be coming out to San Diego and to California in July and hanging out with Karen and all the Hyperball crew. So that's really exciting for us. So, yeah, Will, will you be going to Comic-Con?
I do not know. I've never been before. And, I know. Everyone makes the exact same noise when I say that. And I would love to go. And I've made kind of a promise to myself that if I ever go to Comic-Con, it's because I'm on a panel. It's because I'm working on something, and that's why I'm there. So we'll see. But I hope y'all have an amazing time, and that's totally awesome that y'all got classified for press and all that. And yeah. I know that's a big deal, and that's totally awesome. And I think y'all are gonna have an amazing time down there.
Well, maybe we will see you around anyway in California. We shall see. We'll be out there for a little while. So. Yeah, it'll be fun. So, yeah, that's about the other thing. That's in July, so we've got a while until then. And then we'll be doing, you know, obviously some more updates with the podcast between now and the show starting. Did we announce the premiere date, Karen? Is that a thing that's official?
That is a thing that's official, and it's going to be June 29th. So that's very exciting.
That's correct, yes, Will.
It's going to be awesome. I cannot wait because I've been seeing footage from the first couple of episodes, and it's just going to make everyone lose their shit. And I can't wait.
I'm excited. Everyone's excited. It's going to be great. You know, Karen, are you going to rewatch some stuff before season 5?
I would like to. I feel like
I was thinking about it.
Yeah, I definitely need to rewatch season 4, but I really want to go back to season 3 as well because I really like that two-parter there, especially the Kitsune stuff.
Oh, good. All right, exciting. Cool. Well, thank you so much to Will for coming on and hanging out with us today and for being so nice and enthusiastic. It's always good to have really cool people as part of the show and that you aren't all, like, jaded and mean and stuff, so that's nice.
It was completely my pleasure, and I have had a wonderful time, and it's just been awesome and wonderful.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. We will speak to you soon, and, you know, everyone will get this episode soon. Hopefully they enjoy it. So thank you, and we'll all say bye now. So bye.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Blue, please to be with you. Look around. place to